Hello, this is Lincoln, reading for you the Iroquois County Times-Republic for Thursday, September 4th, 2025. Starting at the top of the page, Watsika's Martin Avenue Road Extension Open, by Carla Waters, Managing Editor. Watsika's Martin Avenue Road Extension is open. The road extension goes past the Watsika Community High School and Heritage Woods from Belmont Avenue to 10th Street by the Iroquois County Courthouse. Public Works Director Lauren Grosvenor said there is still some restoration work to be done. The road is completed with curb and sidewalks. The stop sign ordinance is completed. We're waiting for some speed limit signs to go up, and then it's mainly site restoration, and the detention pond has to be completed for stormwater. He said the detention pond is on the back side of Porter Avenue. It's already there. They're just working on the under drain, he said. Grosvenor said that it is a 25-mile-per-hour residential zone, and people should be mindful of that. The Watsika Police Department has placed its electronic speed sign in that area for now. That gives us another ingress and egress to the hospital, the nursing home, and the school, he said of the new road. Watsika Family Festival attendance numbers announced, by Carla Waters, Managing Editor. Attendance numbers for the Watsika Family Festival have been announced. August 23rd was the biggest attendance day of the festival. Festival committee members say the total Saturday for the concerts was 3,238, with 2,694 of that general admission and 544 party pit attendees. Festival President Jason Cahoe said that does not include festival committee members, fire department and spouses, police, corporate sponsors, Legion members and spouses, children 13 and under, and volunteers, all of whom did not get wristbands, so the number is actually higher than announced. This is only the people who went to the concert, he said of the numbers. The concerts also drew people from 10 states who purchased tickets. The festival ran from August 21st through the 23rd at Legion Park in Watsika. A number of tried and true events were back this year, including the Color Run, the Police Fire Water Fight, opening ceremony, craft and flea market vendors, food trucks, and more. Participation for events like the Color Run were up this year. New events like the Baby Contest and the Princess Party had large turnouts. We were very pleased with the turnout, Cahoe said. We have some awesome sponsors, and we couldn't do it without them, and our volunteers, and our partner organizations. He said the Kid Zone was very well attended. Everybody really enjoyed themselves over there. He had a good crowd and turnout in that area, he said. There were some challenges and roadblocks, he said, but everything went very well. We had some generator and sound issues, none of which were our fault, but we took them in stride, and the committee all worked together and got through them. The sound went out during presentation of colors and also during Neil McCoy's concert on August 23rd. K.O. said the crowd took over, for example, with McCoy's concert when they started singing the Star Spangled Banner, and the crowd took over in a spontaneous moment. K.O. said McCoy posted a video on social media which at present has 77,000 views. That's a lot of eyes on Watsika, he said. He said leading up to the festival, when committee members were at parades, they played Suds in a Bucket, a Sarah Evans song, and used a bubble machine to make the suds. Evans was also a performer August 23rd. During her part of the entertainment, he said, when that song was performed by Evans, committee members took the bubble machine out into the party pit and fired it up to make bubbles for the crowd. Evans, he said, enjoyed that, saying she had never had anyone do that before. Leading up to the festival, as the committee got ready, he said they had to pump water off the ball field to get it ready. We ran into a snag here and there with the buses, but we got through it here and there. He said, too, that city officials have noted that they have heard lots of positive comments about the festival this year. Cahoe said they appreciate all the support and everyone who attended. We're going to move on to 2026, he said, noting that they have put a bid in for an entertainer next year. Announcement of the entertainment is usually in February before the festival happens in August. Watseka Auxiliary officers complete Stop the Bleed training. Auxiliary officers from the Watseka Police Department completed Stop the Bleed training September 2nd. According to information from Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency Coordinator Scott Anderson, the training equipped the officers with life-saving skills to control severe bleeding in trauma situations. The course, supported by the U.S. Department of Defense and led by the American College of Surgeons, focuses on providing immediate care to victims of injury before professional medical help can arrive. The training was provided by Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency Coordinator Scott Anderson. With emergency medical services often taking at least 7 to 10 minutes to arrive, and a person with severe bleeding potentially bleeding out in as little as 3 to 5 minutes, first responders are in a critical position to save lives. The program teaches officers three basic techniques to control bleeding: applying direct pressure to a wound, packing a wound with gauze, and properly applying a tourniquet. Anderson said victims can often bleed out in 3 to 5 minutes, long before first responders can help. That's why these skills are so important, especially for those that do things outside and those who live further away from a hospital or an EMS department. The campaign was initiated by the Department of Defense after the Sandy Hook school shooting to empower bystanders to help save lives during traumatic events involving severe bleeding. The program has since expanded globally, providing life-saving training and equipment to millions of people. I-57 construction underway in Iroquois County. Dateline, Iroquois County. The Illinois Department of Transportation announced that construction is underway on Interstate 57 in Iroquois County. The work zone will be from the Buckley Interchange, exit 272, to the Ford County line, according to IDOT. The project will patch and resurface the road, including the main line station rest area parking lot. Also, repairs will be made to bridges carrying Iroquois County Highway 10 over I-57 and I-57 over Spring Creek and Lewis Creek. Work this year will be on the northbound lanes before shifting to the southbound lanes in spring 2026. This $30.6 million project is expected to be completed by the end of 2026. Motorists can expect delays and should allow time for trips through this area and be prepared for slow and stopped traffic. To avoid the work area, when feasible, use of alternate routes should be considered. Drivers are urged to pay close attention to changed conditions and signs in the work zones, obey the posted speed limits, refrain from using mobile devices, and be alert for workers and equipment. Over the next 6 years, IDOT is planning to improve more than 3,200 miles of highway and nearly 9 million square feet of bridge deck as part of Rebuild Illinois, which is investing $33.2 billion into all modes of transportation. Accomplishments through year 6 of Rebuild Illinois include almost $20.8 billion of improvements statewide on 7,897 miles of highway, 815 bridges, and 1,181 additional safety improvements. Uplifted Care plans Women's Vet-to-Vet Cafe. All women veterans are welcome to attend Uplifted Care's Women's Vet-to-Vet Cafe from 10 a.m. noon to noon, September 10th. Women will have the opportunity to meet other women veterans, share stories, access resources, and make new connections. Coffee and light snacks are provided according to information provided. Calling all caregiver givers. Please join us for the Caregiver Support Group, hosted September 10th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Uplifted Care Community Grief Center, 3115 North 1000 West Road, Bourbonnais. If you're a family caregiver, you know that the role comes with a unique mix of joy and heartache, fulfillment and stress. You are not alone on this complex path. Uplifted Care understands the ups and downs of caregiving and offers our caregivers support group, designed to provide support, understanding, and expert advice each month. Light lunch and refreshments will be served. To ensure adequate materials are prepared, please RSVP for this event by calling 815-939-4141. People are invited to join the Family Grief Workshop on September 17th from 10 to 11:30 a.m. at the Uplifted Care Community Grief Center, 3115 North 1000 West Road, Bourbonnais. Families are invited to join us for our Family Night Grief Workshop that will include pizza, a movie, and discussion. You and your family will have the opportunity to connect with others experiencing similar grief emotions to help create a community of healing. You'll enjoy dinner and a movie and then have the opportunity to discuss the grief-related themes and help learn powerful coping skills to help your family navigate their journey. All ages are invited to attend, but children must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. All supplies will be provided along with refreshments. Registration is required to attend, so materials may be prepared. To register for this free grief workshop or for more information on all of our grief support services, please call our office today at 815-939-4141. The Uplifted Care Community Grief Center offers something for everyone at any stage of their grief journey. All services are completely free of charge. Grief support groups are held weekly unless noted below. Mondays, loss of a parent, 10 a.m., finding your new normal, 10 a.m., grief walk and talk, 12 p.m. Tuesdays, women's talk and tea, 10 a.m., spousal loss, 4 p.m. Wednesdays, moving through grief yoga, 10 a.m., third Wednesday of each month. Child loss, 4 p.m., first and third Wednesday of each month. Thursdays, grief book club, fourth Thursday of each month. Saturdays, kids hour, 12 p.m., third Saturday of the month, January, February, April, May, June, July, August, and November. To register for the free support group or for more information on all of our grief support services, please call our office today at 815-939-4141. How drought and ozone pollution team up to reduce soybean yield. Urbana, Illinois. In a decisive new study, crop scientists at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and USDA's Agricultural Research Service show that soybeans are doubly damaged by drought and ozone pollution. both of which are increasing across the globe due to climate change, according to information from University of Illinois College of ACES. The study settles the question of whether drought stress could actually protect soybean plants from the damaging effects of ozone, which include leaf bronzing, leaf drop, and yield loss. Here's the logic. Leaves are speckled with thousands of tiny openings called stomata that let carbon dioxide in and water vapor out. When they sense drought, plants close their stomata to conserve water. Some early studies suggested that by causing stomata to close, drought may also prevent ozone from entering leaves and damaging sensitive tissues. We found that really wasn't the case. There was a significant negative impact of ozone on yield, regardless of drought, said study co-author Lisa Ainsworth, C.A. Ewing, Chair of Crop Physiology and Professor of the Department of Crop Sciences, part of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at Illinois, or ACES. To arrive at that conclusion, Ainsworth's team grew soybeans in the field for 3 years under ozone concentrations of 100 parts per billion, similar to summer concentrations in agricultural regions in China and India today, while excluding about 40% of each season's rainfall. The team leveraged the world's longest-running free air concentration enrichment facility, SOY FACE, established in 2001 through a collaboration between USDA-ARS and U of I. The facility allows reachers to manipulate and hold constant the atmospheric and weather conditions in a production field, something that's typically only possible to simulate on small scales using highly artificial equipment like growth chambers. The researchers measured physiological characteristics related to photosynthesis and hormone signaling in the growing plants, as well as yield at the end of each season. Elevated ozone consistently reduced photosynthetic efficiency and reduced yield with fewer and smaller seeds in each pod. Hormone signaling was important to study because, as a counterpoint to the idea that drought could cause stomata to close and protect plants from ozone, scientists have hypothesized that ozone may disrupt the hormone abscisic acid, which conveys the drought signal from roots to stomata. That would mean stomata stay open, allowing ozone to pour in and damage photosynthetic machinery. But that's not what Ainsworth's team found. The abscisic acid concentration was linearly correlated with how much moisture was in the soil, regardless of whether plants were grown in ambient or elevated ozone, she said. So there was no evidence that ozone prevented plants from responding to drought. So even though abscisic acid was working properly and stomata were responding to drought, ozone still got in and damaged tissue. Why? Ainsworth says stomata don't typically close all the way, even in the driest years. At 100 parts per billion, any amount of ozone that gets in is problematic. Once it's inside a leaf, ozone can turn into other reactive oxygen species that can enter cells and produce signals that say, hey, we're under attack, and lead to changes in gene expression, she said. Under very high ozone concentrations, a photosensitive response can be triggered, causing cells to die. Although U.S. Corn Belt ozone concentrations are lower than the 100 parts per billion tested in the study, the threshold for damage is only about 40 parts per billion. Ainsworth says Corn Belt concentrations routinely exceed that level during the growing season and are projected to increase through 2070. She also says farmers may not recognize ozone damage because the symptoms could be mistaken for diseases or other environmental damage. She hopes her latest study will raise awareness among farmers, breeders, and policymakers. Drought and ozone pollution are just part of our growing environment today. Understanding how these factors interact will help us design practices that could mitigate their effects. As we're thinking about targets for crop improvement, regardless of whether there's drought or not, improving ozone tolerance will be key. Ozone is a short-lived pollutant, which means we have the ability to do something about it in the short term. Our work shows that 100 parts per billion ozone has a very high, big impact on seed development in soybeans. If we want to have an immediate way to increase yields, reducing ozone pollution is a good strategy, Ainsworth said. This is solvable. The study, Drought Does Not Mitigate Reductions in Soybean Photosynthesis and Yield Caused by Elevated Ozone, is published in Plant Physiology. This study was supported by USDA ARS funding to the Global Change and Photosynthesis Research Unit. Ainsworth is also affiliated with the Department of Plant Biology in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. The Realizing Increased Photosynthetic Efficiency Project, the Carl R. Woese Institute for Genomic Biology, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, and the Center for Advanced Study at U of I. Iroquois County Sheriff's Police Reports. On August 22nd, Jesse McGee of 43 of Gilman turned himself in to serve 30 days for driving while license revoked. On August 23rd, Iroquois County deputies arrested Philip Franklin of Sheldon, 38 years old. According to police reports, deputies attempted to stop a vehicle driven by Franklin. Franklin refused to stop and fled from deputies. Franklin eventually stopped in the area of Lincoln and U.S. Highway 52 in Iroquois. Franklin was arrested and charged with aggravated fleeing and eluding and speeding 35 miles per hour over the posted speed limit. Franklin was taken to the Iroquois County Jail, where he was later released on a notice to appear. On August 24th, Iroquois County deputies arrested Anthony Molian Brow, 35, of Danville. According to police reports, Molian Brow was being held in Vermilion County on an Iroquois County warrant for driving while license revoked. Molian Brow was transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where he remains awaiting his next court appearance. On August 24th, Iroquois County deputies arrested Brian King, 48, of Danville. According to police reports, King was being held in Vermilion County on an Iroquois County warrant for bad checks. King was transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where he remains awaiting his next court appearance. On August 26th, Iroquois County Sheriff's Police arrested Thomas E. Crook, age 64, of Milford, and Ashley B. Tucker, age 37, of Milford. According to police reports, Crook and Tucker were taken into custody after deputies investigated a burglary that had occurred at a rural Milford address. Crook and Tucker were charged with burglary and theft over $500. In addition, Tucker was charged with possession of methamphetamine less than 5 grams. Both Crook and Tucker were taken to the Iroquois County Jail, where they were released with a notice to appear. On August 27th, Iroquois County Sheriff's Police arrested Tammy R. Burnside, age 45, of Woodland. According to police reports, Burnside was charged with driving while license suspended, operating an uninsured motor vehicle, and possession of a controlled substance less than 5 grams. Burnside was transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where she was released with a notice to appear. On August 27th, Iroquois County Sheriff's Police arrested Eddie Mansilla, Jr., age 46, of Kankakee, and Jose J. Moreno, age 40, of Kankakee. According to police reports, Mansilla, Jr., and Moreno were taken into custody after deputies were dispatched to a rural Chabanne's mobile home park for a reported burglary. After an investigation, Mansilla, Jr., and Moreno were charged with burglary and theft over $500. Moreno was additionally charged with obstructing justice. Both subjects were transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where they were released with a notice to appear. On August 27th, Iroquois County Sheriff's Police arrested Kylan O. Wells, age 26, of Beaverville. According to police reports, Wells was taken into custody and charged with residential burglary, theft over $500, and criminal damage to property. The arrest came after deputies were dispatched to a rural Beaverville address for a reported residential burglary. Wells was transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where he remains. On August 27th, Iroquois County Sheriff's Police arrested Stephen L. Varner, age 36, of Watseka. According to police reports, deputies were dispatched to a rural Milford address for a reported domestic disturbance. During the deputies' investigation, Varner began to verbally threaten and obstruct officers, and he was subsequently placed under arrest. Varner then fought with officers while being taken into custody. He was charged with aggravated battery to a peace officer, resisting arrest, threatening a public official, domestic battery, and resisting arrest. Varner was transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where he was released with a notice to appear. On August 28th, Iroquois County Sheriff's Police arrested Jennifer L. Brock, age 35, of Sheldon. According to police reports, Brock was charged with aggravated domestic battery. Brock was transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where she was released with a notice to appear. Watseka man charged with aggravated battery to peace officer, other charges. A Watseka man was charged with battery to a peace officer and other charges after an incident in the 400 block of West Walnut Street. According to Watseka police reports, police were dispatched to that 400 block of West Walnut Street at 9:50 p.m. August 27th for a report of an intoxicated man threatening multiple people. Upon arrival, officers located a male matching the description provided. When officers attempted to make contact, the suspect became aggressive and struck one officer on the right arm. After a brief struggle, the suspect was taken into custody and identified as David L. Baker, 44, of Watseka. Baker was arrested and charged with disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and aggravated battery to a police officer. He was transported to the Iroquois County Jail without further incident. And this has been Lincoln reading for you the Iroquois County Times-Republic for Thursday, September 4th, 2025. Have a great day.